Welcome to On Tap with Corey and Ira, where they discuss Southern Minnesota breweries and beer. Here's your host, Corey Butler and Ira Carlson.
This is 95 The One, AM 1080 KYMN Radio, streaming live on kymnradio.net. This is On Tap with Corey and Ira. I am Corey Butler.
And I'm Ira Carlson.
And we are your bi-weekly show exploring Southern Minnesota breweries and beer. And that's what we do. Occasionally, we take a detour and talk wine and maybe something else today, briefly. Speaking of that, Ira, what's on tap today?
We had a great show coming up here for you. We had a chance to talk to Austin Jevney from Forager Brewing Company out of Rochester. Get to talk a little bit about his sour program, which is really pretty good.
And more.
And more, of course. Yeah, there's a lot more about Foragers to talk about, as you'll see as I get a little excited about it. But yeah, no, we have Andrew in with the style of the week and some interesting news coming up here, especially locally. And of course, a couple of beers of the week, including another little local tie-in. So got a pretty good show coming up here for you.
Not quite a beer, so you want to make sure you stick around and find out what that is. But before we get into today's show, maybe we should chat a little bit about what we did this past weekend. As most of our craftier listeners know, we aren't a live show necessarily. We tend to record most of our material. And looking ahead to Minnesota winter, we were a little concerned about getting people in studio. Should there be, a blizzard or an ice storm or something to that nature? So we took a little tour this past week and we headed down south.
Yeah, we had a blast. We kind of hit up five different locations, got several different interviews in, including visiting a past guest as we were out on the road. So first started out down in New Ulm, stopped at the Star Keller. That's something to both see and taste. It's a pretty amazing place to go to. Then headed out towards Marshall, stopped at Brow Brothers, made a little stop all the way over in Hendricks to visit a bank, and then came back around and hit Take 16 in Laverne and finally ended in Oswald. So quite the trip that we made.
Oswald and Blue Earth, and it was a very long trip. We left Northfield about 8 o'clock in the morning, got back just shy of 11 at night. We did have a driver. We were being responsible, so you have those shows to look forward to. Coming up here in the winter months, should air in December, January, February, so we're still figuring out some of those details. The biggest detail I think we need to work out, and I'm okay with debating this on air as we figure out what we want to do, but I think it's fair to debate the merits of the name. We've been kind of at a tussle about what we should name this. I want to do something kind of beer-centric and cute. Maybe cute's the wrong word. That's not going to help my argument. But, you know, winter warmer is a big beer style in the winter. You know, a deep beer that makes you feel good when it's cold outside. So I want to call it the Winter Warmer series, and you weren't necessarily on board with that.
Yeah, no, I'm a little more 80s-centric, I will say, and I was trying to go with more of like a Corey and Ira's Big Adventure, you know, getting on the road, you know, road trip style, come up with something along that line. So I'm a little more about the, you know, the road trip, the, you know, Dumb and Dumber, Big and Excellent Adventure kind of thing. So that's what it felt like more to me, but...
Well, we've got a few more weeks to hash this out. I mean, it doesn't have to be officially coined anything, but it's fun to give things names because it is kind of special. We want to do stuff more out of the studio and get into breweries, and this is kind of our first real big venture into recording a bunch of stuff off-site. We did the Rochester event here in August, but you know, we knocked out a bunch, and I think it went well, and we'd like to do more of that in the future, right?
Oh, yeah. No, it was a lot of fun. I mean, it also gets a chance to see the brewer in their environment and get a chance to... kind of check out their space, especially on a trip like this, where outside of New Ulm, I'm not sure if I would have made it to some of these places, at least directly, you know, maybe if I happen to be in that town or whatever, but get a chance to talk about them and get a chance to maybe say, hey, you got to make that road trip down that way. So it was a lot of fun, definitely fun to talk to the different people, but definitely a long day too.
Yeah, and we don't know if they would have made the effort to come see us either. I mean, like we said, we were in the car quite a bit and the closest visitor is an hour and 40 minutes away, so... Asking someone to come from beyond that wasn't probably likely going to happen. So it was an opportunity to get some folks that we may have otherwise not had on the show. And like you said, it's an experience to go visit these places. Part of the reason why we do this, we love it. We're beer enthusiasts, as you like to say. And it's a place where I want to go, all four of them, all five of them for that matter, to check out. So look for those shows coming up here this winter. Follow our Facebook page. You can find out what shows are coming up. We should do a quick thank you to Summit Brewing, our good friends at Summit. They sent us a couple new beers. Both of us were excited for them. Both of them, delivered as expected. They also released Summit, that is, released their beer schedule for 2018. Lots of new beers. We're not going to dive into it today. We don't have time for that. But if you aren't aware of it, you should seek it out. There's some awesome beers coming up. A couple beers making returns to be in the year-round schedule or a seasonal deal. But they've also got a bunch of new stuff coming up. And, you know, we are a Southern Minnesota beer-focused show, but we love Summit. Both of us have told many times how much we enjoy them. And we had Damo on, head brewer from Summit. That's the one rule we've broken so far about having them on. So we're big fans, and people should check them out. But the beers we got, how about you talk about the one that you really, well, I think you probably liked both of them quite a bit, but the one that you really liked.
Yeah, no, I liked both of them, but the one that just stuck with me, and I was like so excited once I had that first sip, and I just like, I really want to have more of this one. It's the new Summit Alt High Stick. You know, obviously a little hockey play on words there.
It wasn't just the name that got you?
No. It was a really good, solid beer. You know, the German portion of it really was kind of coming through on it. Some really great flavor. I was really looking forward to it. In fact, I got psyched into where I was heading into the liquor store the other day, and I saw a sign for it, and I went to go try to find it, and turns out it hadn't been released yet. The sign that caught me by surprise was a tasting event. So if you are looking for it, and we'll talk about yours in a minute here, but it will only be released in one of the variety packs, the penalty box series that Summit will be releasing this winter. But if you see a High Stick out there, I highly recommend it. I really enjoyed that one a lot.
Well, this gig does come with a few perks. We do get beer occasionally before they're released, so thanks to the folks at Summit for sending us some beer and thinking of us. I should say, too, before I get into the second beer, that we did have Damo on the show. If you missed that, head to our website, ontapnorfield.com, to find out. Find that conversation. It was great. It went long. It's very educational. You can also find it on podcast platforms, iTunes, and the like. The other beer was a fun Belgian dark ale. I don't think they've ever done it before. It's called Westy Seventh. It's a takeoff, a pretty famous Belgian beer. There was an interesting conversation with our friends up on the Minnesota Beer Cast, Twin Cities-based show that covers, obviously, beer. Had Nick, the brewer from Summit, on recently, and he talked about this beer. And it was actually interesting to hear about the makeup. We obviously don't have time to delve into that today, and we also don't have the education to talk about it at length like he did. But kind of the process, he said he's not a Belgian fan, but he wanted to brew a Belgian. He's not into the bubblegummy, traditional yeast flavor you get from most Belgian beers. So he wanted to do something a little different, and he talks about sugar selection and syrup selection and all the varieties of hops he looked at and malt. So good conversation. I'd recommend people to go check it out. The beer was outstanding. Very much enjoyed it. Probably will go pick up some. I think that was an Unchained one. So that should be out in 4 or 6 packs. Again, we had samples sent to us. So I don't know how it's going to be delivered to the stores, but you should go pick it up. You liked it?
Oh yeah, I definitely loved it. It had so much rich caramely, dark color to it that I had to grab a beer glass and pour it out into the beer glass just to enjoy the beauty of it. So it was definitely a good beer as well.
That's how you should drink most of your beers.
Yeah, I know.
Well, if you can find a spare glass somewhere. So as I said, find old shows on our website, ontapnorfield.com. Find us on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. Those are our social channels. OnTap with Corey and Ira, I think, is Instagram. OnTap Norfield, Facebook and Twitter. Definitely check out our Facebook page to see who we have come up on the show. We're pretty well booked through the early spring. I've got most of the folks up there. I'll start putting up some winter guests on there as we work through the interviews and make sure we want to keep them on. No, I'm just joking. They'll be on there. I just don't want to get too far ahead. I don't want to take attention away from the guests who will be on sooner. And with that, stick around for the rest of the show.
And now, time for Beers of the Week, brought to us by Firehouse Liquor of Dundas. And speaking of Dundas, our first offering, while not quite a beer, is Keepsake Cidery's Wild Cider. So this is kind of a fun one, especially with the holidays starting to come up here. We can start talking a little bit about some of the extra things you can be bringing to the table, both at Thanksgiving and Christmas time, or even given as stocking stuffers. This one's really kind of a fun one. So this is Keepsake Cidery's, it's their wild cidery. They're using wild yeasts on this. So all the carbonation's coming directly out of just the yeast in there. They're not adding or doing anything else to it. So this comes off as kind of a really dry cider. It comes in at a 6.7%. Nice little bottle that you can share with friends and family. I definitely like this one. I'm not a big cider person, but this is definitely nice, crisp cider. And if you like this, coming up next summer, they're going to also be having a tasting room opening up out there as well. So it's kind of a nice opportunity. If you haven't had a chance to try Keepsake Cidery stuff, you should definitely give it a try.
Yeah, I'm glad that Sean sent this over. I know you got a chance to go check out the new tasting room at Keepsake before they close for the season. I unfortunately did not make it. So I've had a few of their ciders. I've enjoyed it. I'm not a big cider guy, just like you said. I enjoy this. It's nice and dry. It's got a nice little flavor to it. The sediment threw us off a little bit, but right in the bottle says there will be some.
Yeah, so they're not doing any filtering. It just comes off as a nice, crisp, dry cider here. But some nice carbonation and definitely worthwhile.
Yeah, I don't have a big issue with that. As you know, as we get into our next beer about filtering, unfiltered beer, unfiltered fermented drinks, I have no issue with. So Definitely check out Keepsake. Like you said, holiday time, this would be perfect to take and share around the table over some cuts of turkey. Our other offering is from a very well-known Minneapolis brewery, Fulton. It's their new Spectre IPA. It's their take on the Northeast style. It's an adaptation from a beer they had done taproom only, I believe, last year as an honor to a friend who they lost. And I think some of the money raised from that went to a benefit. Where $1 from each pint of that was donated to the American Foundation of Suicide Prevention. So they've taken that beer, I think maybe adapted a little bit, and now have it in the market under the name Spectre. Again, Northeast style beer. There's a lot going on here. They use 20% oats, up to 20% oats. You kind of feel that in the mouthfeel. Smoother than what you would get with most Northeast style or any style IPAs I've had. Good flavor. Fulton, you know, they make a good beer just about every time around. So no surprise there. And there's a ton of hops in here. Different Citra, Mosaic, Amarillo, and Nelson Sauvin. So you get a little bit of that citrus, the stone fruits coming through. It's a solid offering.
Yeah, it's definitely a lot of different flavors kind of coming at you. This one may not be my favorite. You know, nothing against Fulton. I've liked some of their other stuff a little bit better. It just has, like you were talking about, so many different flavors. I feel it's a little bit muddled, but overall, it's not a bad beer. I just don't know if I'd be reaching for this one all the time. But I mean, again, it, you know, we talk about this all the time. It's, you know, your palate, your style, sure, your choices and stuff. And, you know, that's the beauty of beer. I don't think we should be complaining about if we don't like something. You know, it is a decent beer. It's just maybe not for me.
But I would say any beer that we've ever been given for this segment, go try it at least once.
Like
you said, it depends on your palate. Taste is subjective. The beer is well made. It just isn't your flavor. So if they want to go try one, though, where should they head?
Well, if you want to try either of these beverages today or any of the other beers we've featured on previous shows, they're all conveniently located south on Highway 3 at Firehouse Liquor in Dundas.
Look for the fire truck. We're now welcoming Austin Jevney with Forager Brewing Company in studio. How's it going, Austin?
It's going great. It's nice to have some snow on the ground, or at least trying to stick.
Yeah, we're recording this about a week before this airs, and it's a nice snowy day, so thanks for making the trek up from Rochester and contending with the weather.
Oh yeah, not a problem. It's my pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
Good Minnesota guy. You can handle a little wet pavement, right?
Yeah, just shift into four-wheel drive if it gets crazy.
Oh, you're one of the smart ones that has it. Well, I kind of gave it away already. I said Forager's down in Rochester. Can you tell me a little bit about where in Rochester Forager is and why you guys are in Rochester?
Yeah, so I moved there a couple of years ago. My wife works at Mayo Clinic, and I think that brings a lot of people to town. So when I went there, I opened the Thirsty Belgian Bar and Kitchen, which was a nice little restaurant bar on the south side of town, and actually met my business partner there, Annie Henderson. And we kind of realized that we wanted to do something special in town. And we looked all over, searched kind of downtown areas. We found some spots that were good, but just not quite right for us, and decided that we think we could have had a little bit better impact being in a neighborhood. So we ended up being just to the north of the Kutzke Park neighborhood, and it's kind of near the Barlow Hy-Vee complex right off Highway 52 on the Civic Center exit. So it's very accessible for people traveling through town, and also kind of a nice neighborhood spot for people living on the northwest side of town.
It is a nice neighborhood spot. I was down there for work last week at an event and had the opportunity to visit. The second time I went there, the first time I went there was on a bus at night, so I didn't really see anything because it was dark and I'd been drinking. So it was nice to go there during the daylight and drive my way up there from, I was at the Rochester Area Foundation, so I got to weave through some neighborhoods. And I think most people's experience with Rochester is 52 down to 90, or maybe they hop off and go downtown. So for me, it was nice to see that side of the town, and it is a beautiful area, and I think you guys picked nicely, and I'm assuming you have a lot of local traffic from folks there.
We do. It's been received quite well as like almost trying to spark the idea of more neighborhood establishments in town. Rochester built up pretty quickly with IBM and Mayo, and that expansion led to a lot of strip malls. Nothing against them, but we just wanted to have a little bit of a different feel at our location. So we're really happy that we could find something close to downtown, close to the highway, kind of tucked back in a neat little neighborhood area. It is a little bit out of the way, but we have great bike rack and we have three different parking lots. So there's definitely room to stop there.
Yeah, and you talked about the character of the business. Both the outside and inside of the building are phenomenal. And, you know, we're here talking about the brewery end, but what's unique about Forager Brewing Company is you guys have a lot of different things going on there. It's not just about beer. Can you talk a little bit about the concept and how that came together?
Yeah, of course. My background is in the brewing side of things, and my partner, she basically does all sorts of different entrepreneurial work, and she networked really well to receive a bunch of old kind of relics from Rochester that kind of decorate our tap room inside. And that gives it a really nice feel, and we kind of compartmentalized it to utilize different sorts of businesses there as well. So we do have a coffee shop operating out of our space called Fiddlehead. They moved in about 2 months ago, and they're doing great stuff. We also have a little pop-up area in the back, which we lease out to different chefs from pretty much anywhere they want to come from, and kind of test the waters of Rochester before they actually commit to a lease. That's just our pop-up kitchen.
Is that the space between the coffee shop and kind of the market area when you walk back?
That is actually our barrel pantry right now, and we utilize that for all sorts of other events. We have yoga in there. We throw concerts in there, movie nights, trivia, pretty much whatever you'd want to do. Catered events during the day offers a good space so we can kind of move things around, adjust you. But the pop-up kitchen is actually kind of hidden in the northwest corner of the building, back behind the brewery next to the kitchen. You kind of have to stumble upon it to find it there, and that's what made it really unique. But to
it is a fun little room. It's really nicely set up where the visiting chefs have their own cooking area and a lot of seating back there. I was lucky enough to get a little tour of it, so pretty sweet little space to do the pop-ups and such.
It's great, and if you wanted to, you know, have a groom's dinner or something like that and be a little bit more separated from the hustle and bustle of the main restaurant, it kind of provides that private experience back there too, which is nice.
Yep.
And then there's the restaurant. Did you talk about the restaurant then?
Yeah, so the restaurant pretty much encompasses the entire area. During certain days, we will be serving in every single room and the patio, depending on how many servers we have on and demand for seating. And we do have like complete full-on restaurant. So there's a wood-fired pizza oven, which we are rotating pizzas out kind of seasonally, and then have some staples. We also have just your main restaurant, which does everything from vegan pad thai right now to assortment of really great burgers and some fun sandwiches. We also do a brunch on Sunday morning too, which is really great. And we only offer that for 4 hours from 10 to 2.
Yeah, I was there, like I said, last week, and I had the Dirty Burger, and that thing was phenomenal. Yeah,
awesome.
Really good flavor.
That's a great new addition to the menu.
And it's a good variety of menu, too, and it's not too big. It's not overwhelming like you go to a lot of places. So you get good variety, but it's not going to kill you to read through it for a little bit.
Either. And the poutine is amazing.
Oh, I should have had that. Yeah, that was a troublesome dish for me when we started. Ate a little bit too much of that.
Well, it's very nicely priced and a really large serving, so it's it pairs really well with the beer when you're sitting at the bar there. So
that's great to hear, and I can't speak for the chefs 100%, but I know that most of the reason that the menu is a little bit smaller is they just want to focus on the quality of ingredients rather than offer just everything out there under the sun. So things do change every 3 months on the menu, so it's keeps it exciting for them too, but helps them dial in, work with local farmers based on the season of what they can get.
Yeah, and I know we're here to talk about the beer, but talking about the local farmers, if you go in there, you're sitting at the bar, you look to the right up on the wall, you can actually see all the different farms where everything's being locally sourced from currently and stuff. I thought that was kind of pretty cool. You can say it'll actually show you the lambs coming from here or the chickens coming from there, you know, all locally. So pretty sweet to see, you know, not only hearing locally sourced, but seeing, you know, what farms they're saying it's coming from. So pretty cool.
Yeah, it doesn't quite go as far as the Portlandia episode where we actually have to like send you out to the farm and you get to meet the chicken that you're going to eat. But
do you guys at least name the chicken? That's the first step.
Right, yeah, that's the step in getting there. But we really do focus on that as much as we can in all aspects of the business. So we want to showcase those farms and really highlight that people are eating local by coming and supporting us too. And that's something that our base mission really stands behind.
So on the food side, you talked about locally sourcing stuff and kind of rotating stuff through seasonally. Is it fair to say you mirror that on the beer side? Just from watching your menu change from afar, it seems like you have a lot of stuff come through. And we'll talk about the demand. That's part of the reason. But it seems like you do change up your beer offerings quite a bit.
Yeah, our beer offerings kind of change as like the foraging season would change. So we're constantly rotating through different beers. We do have a couple that stay on tap a lot more than others. But for example, the local ingredients that we're using right now are starting to slightly, you know, dwindle away, just with the change in the weather here. But the beer that I brought today, our Twisted Twig with Todd Plums, showcases some organic fruit from the Blue Fruit Farm in Winona, Minnesota. And we buy a lot of stuff from them. They just provide a great product. And again, we want to support that kind of vision for the farmers. So we will have that available in crowlers down there for probably the next month or so up until the holiday season. And we also have a beer here called Autumn Harvest, which showcases Wisconsin-grown organic Long Island cheese pumpkins. And there's not a ton of them in there. It's not a super pumpkin-forward beer. It's more focused on the spice and malt balance there. But it still does have one of those fun local fruits in there. And actually, we have on tap right now a beer. It's like a Neapolitan stout that showcases strawberries grown right here in Northfield at Lawrence's Berry Farm. And we do buy a ton of stuff from them. We'll be bringing out a couple raspberry beers, showcasing their raspberries also a little bit later on this year for bottle releases.
Did that just go on? I didn't see that last week.
Yeah, it went on, I think, 2 days ago.
Son of a bitch. That sounds delicious.
It's a kind of our interpretation of like a melted Neapolitan ice cream sandwich in a glass.
Okay.
Thick, rich chocolate, vanilla.
Yeah, that sounds all right. I mean, what I had was good, but yeah, that sounds
maybe our upcoming trip. Detours. Oh, no, that might be a little
too
far.
That's the wrong way on the map, my friend.
It is 10.5% too, so it's not that perfect mid-road trip beer.
Yeah, definitely it's not going to work for us. Well, we are having, we're not having the, I was going to say blueberry, not blueberry, the plum beer right now. We're having the spice beer, and I like it. You know, we talk a lot about seasonal beers here, fall, winter beer, and a lot of them are heavily spiced. Even the pumpkin ones don't usually have raw or pure pumpkin. It's usually spice, and this is good. It's good. It doesn't overwhelm you like a lot of them with the nutmeg and the cinnamon and the coriander and whatever else they throw in there. I mean, it's nice and subtle and easy drinking. So well done on that one.
Thanks. Yeah, we again have a wood-fired oven, and we use that to toast all of our spices in-house. So we definitely try and be a little bit light-handed on those and let the yeast strain and esters come out during fermentation. That really accentuates some of that spice by not having to put so much in, and therefore you're not left with that kind of like drying effect of too much nutmeg. Yeah. And I think it just rounds out kind of the flavors of the base beer as just like little accents rather than just throwing in a bunch of McCormick's ground up spice or dripping in some extracts. So we do grind everything in a mortar and pestle and then toast it in the wood fired oven, throw it directly into the beer. So I think that gives like a very nice authentic touch of those spices too.
I want to talk about your history with brewing, but I want to talk about the process, since you just talked about what sounds like excruciating to me, crushing down the spice and roasting and all that. It sounds like you guys take a lot of pride in the entire process, both on the food side, but obviously we want to talk about the beer side, the foraging aspect. I know you go out and forage some of the ingredients you use. I think you just mentioned, well, you guys have bought locally, but I've seen photos of you out foraging different things, right? Your yeast and maybe other ingredients. I mean, you must take a lot of pride in the process from the first ingredient to fill in someone's glass.
It's, you know, kind of the base core of the brewing mission for us is using just the highest quality ingredients that we can get. Mm-hmm. So a lot of those do come from other countries. We use a lot of English malt. We use a lot of German hops. But we do try to get as many things as we can locally. Mm-hmm. So as far as the foraging process, I wish that we could do it a little bit more often. It ends up kind of taking the back burner in the summer to so many beer festivals and just events that we're throwing at the brewery itself. But we definitely are focused a lot on it. This year, we weren't able to get as many fruits as we were in the past. And sometimes how that goes is, for instance, this year, the blackberry patches that we had gone foraging in the previous year had all got a fungal disease, which we just found out. You know, you go out into the field and you find that the blackberries aren't ripening properly, and they're really, really sparse, and there's hardly any berries on the plants. They're all kind of dried out. So it is kind of that seasonal thing where it's a hit and miss, and as frustrating as it can be, it's just, you know, Mother Nature's way of kind of telling you that, hey, this isn't the beer you're supposed to be producing this way, this year. So why don't you try and go out and, be creative and find something else that you can do with the base beer that's, ready for those particular fruits, which actually keeps my job really exciting. It is a lot of work, like you said, to process these berries, to go out and handpick things, but In the end, I do think it's worth it to try and get as many as we can. We also do work with some other local foragers who we pay for them to go out and pick certain berries for us just because of lack of time and growth within the brewery itself.
And I got to ask before I forget, you said this is Wisconsin cheese pumpkin?
That's yeah, so it's a Long Island cheese pumpkin.
Long Island,
and,
okay.
Basically, they were grown in Wisconsin, but it's an heirloom variety that I've had a friend of mine from a Nosh restaurant and bar in Lake City, Minnesota. Mm-hmm. He makes a wonderful pumpkin cheesecake every once in a while, and this is a pumpkin that he used in that and inspired me to use that into the beer rather than kind of your traditional small pie pumpkins. It has a little bit more of like a rustic gourdy flavor to it and strays a little bit away from that like traditional kind of canned pumpkin flavor.
Yeah.
And I think that also is nice in this beer because it helps those spices shine a little bit more and gives it a unique flavor. We do caramelize these pumpkins in the wood-fired oven, mixed with a lot of the spices and some vanilla. A little bit of chocolate in there too. So it's another utilization of kind of our culinary friends and expertise crossed into the beer directly. And we think that that's a great kind of upper hand we have working with so many talented chefs.
Sounds like a good use of resources.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I'm going to say, and Corey will probably mark this down and hold it against me, because we normally we go back and forth. I'm not normally a pumpkin guy, but this is actually, I really do enjoy this. It's subtle. The pumpkin beers that I think of always kind of like kick you in the face a little bit, and it's just too much spice, too much pumpkin. It's just not enjoyable.
Or overly sweet.
Yeah, and this is just a really nice, subtle, good beer. I got to tell you, I really enjoy this one.
That's great. And that's kind of why we call it the Spiced Imperial Amber rather than just like a pumpkin beer. I do think that this beer will be great all the way up until, you know, after the Christmas holiday. We have a lot packaged and we're hoping that, you know, people, just because it has pumpkins on the picture, doesn't make them think that it shouldn't be drank after Halloween. It actually goes wonderfully with your Thanksgiving meal or, you know, any sort of
Christmas ham.
Exactly. Yeah. Yep. All the way up.
It's got a little warming effect. You said it's an Imperial Amber. Where's it coming in on ABV?
It's dancing just over 8%. So we shoot for 8% exactly this year. Must have been a little bit more sugar in that pumpkin, and it turned out to be 8.1. So not super strong, but, you know, bold enough for the cold weather coming
in. Yeah, just a little warmth there.
Yep. I mean,
definitely palatable. Nothing wrong with that. Well, let's talk a little bit about your experience. How'd you get into brewing? Why did you want to get into brewing? And how'd you come to today?
So I guess now doing the math, it was about 12 and a half years ago that I started brewing. The first time was a homebrew with two friends of mine when I worked at the Wedge Community Co-op up in the Twin Cities. They were brewing a clone beer of Two Hearted Ale for a friend's wedding. And at that point in my beer intake career, I had grown up in Wisconsin, so I was kind of a lager, German-style Hefeweizen boy, and IPAs just weren't to my taste at that point. But however, we made this beer, we went to the wedding, and when we were drinking it, I found it to be really, really, really good, and kind of it inspired this idea within me that maybe I could make the beer styles that I liked. So after that, I asked my friends if they would kind of guide me through the process of like what it took to make beer. And I basically got a handful of books. And that was kind of how I learned in the beginning, just reading everything out there that you could. And my first beer attempt was a clone at New Glarus Spotted Cow. It was just a beer that I thought would be a good, easy drinker and would showcase any mistakes I might have made in the process. Mm-hmm. And it actually turned out pretty good. So from that point on, I got really into it, ended up buying my own equipment and getting into, you know, packaging, bottling beers, and then from that point on, kegging beers. So once this, you know, became a problem of giving away all this beer and people being like, hey, like, I'd actually buy this beer from you.
That's when you know they really like it, because when they say, hey, this free beer is great.
Exactly.
That's a little different, right?
That was like when the light kind of clicked on up there that it's like, hey, maybe I could take this to another level. But in a lot of those books that I'd read, Brewing Up a Business by Sam from Dogfish was very, very good at kind of guiding people's paths and not getting ahead of themselves. And for me, that was getting experience in a real brewery. And at that point, it was about 2007. Surly had just started. There weren't really any breweries in Minnesota to get a job at. So sure. I was knocking down the door with Omar all the time, being like, hey, what can I do? What can I do? And it just didn't really seem to be the time for them that they were expanding or hiring, which is kind of funny to think of now as to where that company is.
But wait for a couple checks to clear.
That was exactly it. Yeah. So I basically ended up making a connection at a beer festival I went to with my dad down in the Wisconsin Dells. And I was just talking to some guys from Rush River Brewing Company out of River Falls. And we ended up kind of chatting, getting along, and they invited me out for a basically volunteer run on their bottling line just to see if I would be interested in doing that kind of work. And from that point on, I kind of just fell into it. You know, I started talking to the owners, Nick and Dan and Robbie at that time, about what their advice would be about opening your own brewery. So I was very, you know, transparent with them from day one about my goals and my mission with beer. And they were more than willing to share as much advice as they could. So I worked at Rush River for about 5 years on their packaging line on doing QC. And it was a really good experience. I helped them. I feel like kind of transition into a little bit more crafty beers. I think that their baseline of beers is great. But I always was trying to push their boundaries a little bit too. And it's exciting to see the success of their barrel age series and things like that. So from that point on, I realized that I had, you know, some experience in a distribution brewing company, and I knew what that took. And it was really kind of a factory job. So my interest, I think, went a little bit more towards the beer styles that I was learning to love, which were a little bit more crafted beers, a little bit stronger beers, things that had a little bit more character and freedom of exploration of ingredients and styles. So that kind of led me to the brewpub model. And I attempted to open two brewpubs with different partners in different places and ended up not working out. So kind of leads me back to the story of moving to Rochester and going to the Thirsty Belgian. I was pretty much ready to throw in the towel at that point and just bartend because I enjoyed it. I like selling beer. I like being around beer, but I figured that the two failed opportunities kind of led me down this path that maybe that wasn't what I was supposed to do. I met Annie and things changed drastically from that point.
And you guys been open for a little more than 2 years?
Just over 2 years. September, early September is our anniversary. So.
And I remember going now 2 years ago, almost on the nose. It was in November. It was packed. It was a Saturday night, so it's a Saturday night. But you guys have only been open for 2 months, so nobody may have had anything else to do. You know, it's Rochester, 100,000 people.
Right? I don't know about you. It's been packed every time I've gone there. You know, finding a parking spot is one of the biggest problems.
And that's
you
my
have
point.
There.
It's a testament to what you guys have been able to do in those 2 years, and obviously in those first 2 months of quality product, whether it's on the food side or the beer side. So it's gotta feel good to know people are showing up.
It is, and that was kind of our goal, is to not just be a place for people who wanted beer, but to have actual real community impact through all the different like kind of events that we can throw there. We showcase a ton of different local art, from music to actual visual art showcases to spoken word. And then I think that, you know, food is art too. So allowing those people to do the pop-up kitchens and kind of showcase the talents that exist in Rochester and giving those people an outlet has been like a focal point of our business. And we're really excited that, you know, the community has backed that, kind of gotten behind our concept. Being a brew pub, obviously we have wine and cocktails and spirits as well, and that coffee shop. So it's really kind of something for everyone. We're super kid friendly. We've got a bunch of games and different things to do in our little library area. So we wanted it to be like about the community and like for the community. And that's worked out really well for, I think, Rochester as a whole, kind of bringing people into town to experience what we have, and also providing something fun and unique for the people who actually live there with families.
Well, looking at some of Annie's other properties, she's done some pretty creative spots, whether it be the Dodgery, which most people might not even know about unless you know where to look. It's kind of one of those, you know, you're passing by, you got to go down some stairs and around a couple corners to find it. You talked about the Thirsty Belgian. I'm not sure what else all she's involved in there, but each place is definitely unique. You know, it's not your standard fare, whichever place you go. So that's got to be nice to be partnered with somebody with that kind of creative thinking.
Yeah, that vision was one of the main reasons that when I first met her, I was really inspired by her just push to change Rochester. And some of the other people that I'd worked with in the past knew a ton about beer, but not a lot about programming. And that was her strength. If she was sitting here, she'd say, I don't know anything about beer. And she knows plenty about it. But at the same time, she really knows how to like network herself and make the right friends in town to actually push things through, get things done. One of the coolest things that she did was C4. It's kind of like an artist cooperative downtown that allowed free showcasing of art and sale of art. Yeah, kind of like a open space for these people in town. And that was the first of that style to happen in Rochester. So after meeting her, it was very simple to understand that, you know, if we could put both of our, you know, strengths together, we could probably have the chance to do something pretty special. And we're just happy that it worked out.
Yeah, I mean, if going in there, I don't know if you touched on it before, but this actually used to be an old co-op. And so when you go in there, you think of a supermarket space, and so you think of this wide open, and no, you get in there and there's just all these different spaces, you know, and each one's unique, you know, whether it be the coffee shop space you talked about, or a little private, you know, sitting room, you know, the big, you know, dining room, and then obviously all the other little spaces you have throughout there. You touched on it briefly earlier, some of the decorations. I forget the name of the restaurant, but you actually took what was like a long, tried and true supper club downtown Rochester that finally closed up. They took a lot of that, added those accents in. It's really a pretty creative place compared to a lot of the places, at least when we're talking breweries or even brew pubs. It's amazing the creativity that went into that space.
Yeah, the design was kind of a focal point, too, as to making it comfortable for everyone. There's a lot of great breweries across our country making amazing beer kind of out of like a warehouse. And we just wanted our experience being a restaurant to be a little bit more focused on the decor and comfort, and then also showcasing, you know, a little bit of the history of Rochester. So those pieces you speak of were from Papa Giorgio's bar downtown. We actually make a beer called Regal Hops. It's a double citra IPA that is kind of brewed to honor those dragons that kind of illuminate the tap room there. We have some old wainscoting in the library that was taken out of the old post office in town. A lot of the wooden pieces that like line the walls were all from a barn that we actually tore down. They were going to burn it down. It was the last standing barn in Rochester proper. And we ended up paying the insurance costs to just basically break it down ourselves so we could preserve the wood. And then one of my brewers, Paul Metz, sat there for about a week and a half and like ripped all those boards into different widths so we could have this kind of like neat layered decor. I think he probably got shot in the face by like 400 nails during that process. He was wearing a mask, OSHA, I promise. And it was a lot of work. Right. So really in the beginning, a lot of our employees who still work there right now are responsible for the entire build out too, which was kind of a great team building exercise to like have this place mean something a little bit more than just your job too. It's like your sweat equity went into all that. And it's been a really fun adventure to meet these people and meet the rest of the community as well. So
you touched on this a little bit through your experience at Rush River about your growth as a brewer and what interested you. Can you talk a little bit about your philosophy with beer? Obviously we've touched on the process and the beginning to end for you, and your focus on trying to do more, I don't want to say comfort beer, but maybe some bigger sitting beers and just exploring different flavors. I think people from afar who maybe just read online and maybe chat with friends know you've got a pretty developed sour program. You mentioned the Regal Hops, I believe, but you also have what, Hip Hops?
Yep, Hip Hops is more of our West Coast style IPA.
So you do some good stuff with IPAs. You've got the Sherpa. But I think a lot of people know you for your sours. I mean, that's a risky endeavor just in itself. But it seems like you set yourself apart with that, too, by creating quality sours. And Ira just opened up one. I'm about to sample that. But talk a little bit about your approach with just what you feature. And
yeah, so our beer taste is, in my opinion, kind of constantly evolving. Like, I always like Pilsners. I think they're a great style of beer to kind of come back to all the time. Unfortunately, we're just not able to do that style of brewing. It takes a little bit longer than what we have tank space for at the moment. Hopefully, we're able to expand into that shortly. But overall, we like to brew the beers that we like to drink. And I think there's all sorts of great beer brewed in the Midwest, especially in Minnesota now. And it's great to have those options. Rochester, however, doesn't get distribution of all those beers. And we also don't get distribution of some of our favorite breweries from across the country and world. So we really wanted to start to brew some of those styles so that Minnesota and people driving through could have an opportunity to taste what we love to drink that they might not know is even out there in the market. So that Neapolitan Stout is kind of a perfect example. I don't know if that's been brewed in our state before, a beer of that style. And sour beers for me, growing up again in Wisconsin, New Glarus has been making sour beers since the early 90s. And they were something that I was drinking, and at that time kind of like unknowing of what I was actually tasting. I moved to Minnesota, and at that point there were no sour beers available in Minnesota unless you were lucky enough to buy some, you know, Rodenbach or Boone on the shelf at your local liquor store, but nothing being made locally. So when we opened, it was definitely kind of a focus of a couple things. When I worked for the DNR and learned to forage for these wild fruits and berries, I was incorporating those into homebrewed sour beers and really impressed with the result. So that was something that we wanted to do from day one. And actually the second and third batch of beer that we ever brewed, both were sour red style beers fermented on a mixed culture that I'd basically taken off of some barrels that I'd used, which were all inoculated with wild berries and fermented that way. So it was kind of a spontaneous, to say, yeast that had taken over in those barrels. And we're still brewing with that same hops culture today in some of our beers. So that's something we wanted to do. And when we got into the market, I think there were maybe three other breweries, maybe four. I know Surly did Pentagram. Fair State was doing a line of sour beers. Shell Jace over there was making some awesome stuff in those cedar tanks that he, or cypress tanks, I'm sorry, had reconditioned. And we just kind of wanted to be part of that movement in the state. And we're really excited to see in the tap room the people who are actually drinking sour beers. It's maybe not your traditional beer drinkers. So when a lot of people say, you know, your light cream ale is going to be a transition beer from your Budweiser drinker into beer, I ask the question, what is the transition beer for your wine drinker? And I think sour beer is the answer to that question.
Yeah, for the uninitiated, can you give a brewing 100 level explanation of what a sour beer is for those who don't know?
Yeah, so we make a couple different kinds, and I'll start with the simple one. The simple one is a kettle soured beer, which is actually what this Twisted Twig Todd Plums that we're drinking is right now. It's a quick way to make a beer with a lot of lactic sourness and then ferment it out quickly and cleanly to run through your system and not really infect anything. So that's what a lot of breweries, I think, are putting out now, because it is a good way to put out a sour beer product and not take the risk of, you know, inoculating your entire brewery with Brettanomyces.
Right.
Which is the little bit more complex long answer. And Brettanomyces is a, for lack of better terms, more of a wild strain of yeast. And there's a bunch of different varieties of it that will produce different flavors. And it works very slow and will eat all sorts of different sugars in your beer. And it doesn't actually usually produce a sour beer at all. It just gives the perception of sourness in certain flavor profiles. But it works really well with lactic acid producing bacteria such as Lactobacillus or Pediococcus. So both of those are pretty much responsible for our barrel fermented sour program, where we let the Lactobacillus still stay alive and the Pediococcus stay alive during the entire process and into the bottle conditioning. Those beers will end up being a lot more dry because, as I said, the Brettanomyces will ferment out pretty much all the sugars available in the beer, but it will produce an array of esters and phenols and flavors that kind of make up that loss of sugar in the backbone and create like a nice full rounded beer too. So the easy one, which is clean, is the kettle sour, and the mixed culture fermentation is kind of your more complex, longer, drawn out souring process.
Yeah, in the last few episodes, we've had some sour beers come through for our Beers of the Week. And over a series of episodes, we've kind of talked, mostly me, and I think I've been speaking for you, Ira, but I think you agree that sours necessarily weren't in our wheelhouse, but I've been slowly warming up to them. And after drinking the Twisted Twig Todd Plums, I'm a firm believer. This is outstanding.
And again, it goes back to what you did with the Harvest one as well, which is, I love the subtleness to it. It's not a kick in the face. It is a nice sour. The plum comes through really nicely with just that little bit of sour underneath it. I've already been a fan of your beers anyways. You know, this spring, I think I was like in, you know, euphoria because I was sitting there. I was down watching a hockey game, came in, had a Cuban that was probably the best Cuban I've ever had in my life, paired it up with a couple of sours, and then I ruined it by going over afterwards right over by the ice arena and having like an Odell's IPA. And it just killed all this momentum of just wonderful flavor and everything else. And then I stepped on it with this, you know, generic boring beer. And so I've already been a fan of the sours, but this one is just really nice. I like Corey saying, just so wonderfully subtle.
That's great. And this one in particular, the acidity was actually raised up a little bit to a higher level rather than lowered and make it a little bit more sour with the addition of those plums, because they weren't very tart, they were actually really sweet. So we wanted to make a very, very sour base beer. So we let that kettle sour for a little bit longer and let the pH drop as low as we pretty much could in there, because we knew when adding these plums back, it was going to bring it more to a tart level than to like a really acidic level. So it is about achieving that balance and kind of knowing like what the fruit's going to do during the aging or blending process. And this one, yeah, is a little bit more subtle, and surprisingly, it does have about 400 pounds of plums in it for just under 200 gallons of beer. So you're getting just over, you know, 2 pounds of plum per gallon, which is a lot, but we do have a beer coming out. It's going to be the same base beer as this. It's just using the strawberries again from Lawrence's Berry Farm here in Northfield. And we have 700 pounds of strawberries in 180 pounds of, or 180 gallons of beer. So that one is, the intent of that is to be a little bit more aggressively fruit forward. We want that one to almost be like a pureed juice of strawberry with this nice little touch of tartness in the back too. So we do take kind of both roads. I'm really glad that you guys enjoy this one because this is one of my favorites we've put out this year. And I think this, representation of this particular kind of Minnesota grown plum is, really fun to taste.
I would say, here's the thing. My wife is not a sour fan. You know, she'll grab my beer, go to take a swig, and I'll say, it's a sour. And then all of a sudden she'll like, eh, and then she doesn't like it. This one, I think, is one that I could actually convince her to really give a solid effort at trying, because this is a good, nice sour. It's, like I said, it's just, I love the subtlety. You know, some of my favorite beers are the ones where you get the subtle flavor. It's not the big kick.
And my recommendation, cucumber gosa.
My recommendation to people who are interested in trying sour beers and, you know, don't want that big rustic, you know, barrely wine flavor, horse
tastes
blanket.
Like a barnyard.
Exactly. Yeah. I would stay away from the barrel fermented sours to start and go to something like this. That's more of a kettle soured beer. Again, I would recommend things that Fair State does there. Roselle, I think, is a great example of a nice kettle sour. It's available all over the state on the market. Same with Jace down at Shell. Their Star of the North series does just a great job of representing like these kind of subtle sour flavors with nothing too crazy going on yet. And once you kind of like transition into being comfortable with just the acidity level, then I think your palate's ready to more explore those Brettanomyces fermented sour beers. And it'll just be a better way to transition and then to jump right into the most intense, aggressive flavors. It can be a little hard that way.
Well, it's like any style. You need to work your way up. You can't start with the dankiest IPA you can find. You got to work your way up with, you know, Boston Lager.
For sure.
How do you feel about the term sour? I know it's hotly debated in the beer community.
Yeah, for kettle sours, I think it's a very appropriate term because the beer tends to be pretty sour. But I do believe that there is other terminology coming out that is really important to embrace, not only for marketing perspective, but for the respect of the styles of beer that are being brewed. And a friend of mine, Levi Funk, down at Funk Factory in Madison, has done a great job of, right, it's his last name, so it works. But he has worked really hard on developing a term with some other great brewers, one Jeffrey Stuffings from Jester King down in Austin, Texas, to basically honor the tradition of making lambic style sour beer. And they came up with a couple different terms. One was méthode aiguë, and that just wasn't accepted amongst some of the Belgian brewers that we're trying to honor here. So they've done a really good job of trying to get a new term kind of passed and agreed upon by everyone, and that has finally happened very recently, and it's called méthode traditionnelle. And what that means is that we're basically making a spontaneous fermented beer in the tradition of Belgian lambics that is similar to anything brewed around the Seine Valley by companies like Dry Fontenin, Cantillon, Lindemann's, etc., and doing that here in the United States, honoring the method and tradition of that style of beer, just not within the region there. So similar to like Gorgonzola or Roquefort, you're trying to make a product, but you're just not doing it in a certain region. So that's something that I think we'll start to see more, is that label, méthode traditionnelle, be placed on bottles of beer that are actually being done that way. And I think it is nicer to say that than a sour beer. And the reason they wanted to do that is because the term American wild ale just wasn't really quite encompassing what they
really
were doing,
resonate.
Too.
Yeah.
They were going steps further than just what it takes to make a wild ale, and they wanted to be able to represent that, but they also wanted to, you know, not cross any lines. So I think sour beer should stick around, but it should be kind of labeled for beers like what we're drinking right now.
Sure.
And then I would personally label most of my barrel fermented beers with a mixed culture more of a wild ale, because a lot of them do house that wild Brettanomyces that was at one point on these berries and then went into a barrel, and then we just fermented the beer with that. So
did what it did.
Yep, it did what it did, and we kind of let it be what it wanted to be and didn't force it in too many directions. So I think there's some other brewers who I would love to sit around and talk to in our state about that, because everyone's kind of got their own opinion, but that's mine.
All right, as we wind down here, there's a couple few things I want to hit on. Obviously, the local community is really taking you in well, and the greater beer community has really embraced what you've done, which is good, but it's also created some challenges for you, beer production namely. And then obviously with the configuration of the building, you just have limited space. Tell me a little bit about the challenges. We talked about this beforehand, just with capacity, getting enough beer out, pulling, you know, your late night shifts and just brewing around the clock to keep up with that. It's a good problem to have, but where does that lead you now from a year from now, 2 years from now? How can you keep up with that demand? And it is a good problem, right, to have that people love your beer.
Yeah, it is. And we're really, again, excited that people have embraced what we're doing down there. So to solve that problem, what we did is we incorporated 4 new fermenters into our brewery, which were all pretty much designated sour fermenters for these kettle sour beers and fruiting. They work really well for that. And we've been expanding our barrel program as we have space in the brewing schedule to do so, because that's been a big popular thing for us, as well as our kind of imperial porters and stouts that get barrel aged in rye and whiskey bourbon barrels. So in order to satisfy the demand of the tap room, though, we do have to keep a really tight brewing schedule. And we're figuring that a lot of people want our beer to go and more accessibility to it. So the goal there is to find some sort of gray area in the laws that we can actually open some sort of company to distribute our product outside of our tap room. We are a brew pub, and in Minnesota, we are not allowed to distribute off premise because of that. We have a catering license, and therefore can cater our beer to special events if you buy food from us as well. But you can't, you know, go to a liquor store or another bar anywhere in the world and find our product. So there's a couple options for us to do that, one of which is contract brewing through a place out of state. And we have done a couple collaboration beers with that particular brewery. They're called Octopi in Wanakee, Wisconsin, and they have a state-of-the-art contract brewing facility. So there's a lot of negativity, I guess, around contract brewing in our state based on certain names of certain companies that have been around in Wisconsin for a long time and produce kind of a mediocre product just based on the age and size of the facility and machinery that they have operating there. So it was fun to work with Octopi and actually see what a big 50-barrel production brew would be like. We then found a hang-up with the name Forager as far as distribution. There's a wine company out of California that makes a style of wine called Forager, and they don't want to allow us to distribute. So for us, it might mean opening another brand to be able to do that. So that's kind of our plan for 2018, is to go down the road of establishing another brand name that still encompasses our same mission and same goals as a brewery, but allows us to produce a little bit more beer for offsite and then also for our own facility. The other option for expansion, which is a little bit more difficult for us, is opening more restaurants. It would be fun to potentially open a restaurant in Duluth and a restaurant in the Twin Cities and a restaurant here in Northfield, but that then creates kind of a staffing issue and it would take me a lot. Yeah. Exactly.
Can't
take
duplicate me away what you guys are doing in Rochester.
That's exactly
it. People and all that. So
at this point, there are ideas floating around for expansion, but at the same time, we're really happy just kind of settling into our shoes at Forager and supporting the other great breweries that we carry on tap as well in the state, and not really fighting our friends for tap lines. You know, that's the other thing about expansion, is all of a sudden the same people that you've been working with your whole career in the beer industry, you're basically trying to take away their income so you can make some, because there's only, you know, 8 tap lines and a lot of bars, and there's only one spot for a sour beer, one spot for an IPA. So I don't really want to step on anyone's toes, but at the same time, like, if we're making a product that's demanded by the public and we think we can do it well on a bigger scale, it's something worth pursuing for sure.
Go for it. Where can people keep up with what you're doing in the brewery?
So follow us at Forager Brewery on Instagram, Facebook, Forager Brewery as well. Forager Beer is a little bit more beer centric. You're going to kind of get the full picture of our restaurant at Forager Brewery. And I'm at Foraging Hopster on Instagram. Follow me if you want. I have some weird kind of pictures on there and insight about what we're going to be doing, coming up with as far as the beer before it's announced anywhere else. So it's kind of your inside scoop on that.
Look at these mushrooms, right?
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah. I have a lot of pictures of my son on there with big giant hen of the woods mushrooms sitting next to him.
There you go.
So it's been a really fun road going down this path and having people kind of agree that what we're doing is a unique and respectable way of producing beer and food for the community of Rochester.
Well, it's all positive reviews from what I've heard and from my experience. Ira, I know you feel the same.
Yeah, I might be a little bit of a fanboy on this one already, but
it's real hard to get your favor. Huh? There's people you like, there's people you really like, and I know Austin's reached the upper echelon in your mind. So, Austin, thanks for coming in. We really appreciate you taking time for us, and best of luck moving forward.
Ira, Corey, thank you guys so much for having me here. I really appreciate the
opportunity. Not a problem. We really enjoyed it.
Cheers.
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 Hey, this is Andrew Burns with another Style of the Week. Today, we're going to talk about brown ale. Brown ale is a Northern English style of beer, and it's kind of a middle-of-the-road kind of style. You know, it's not overly hoppy, not overly bitter, but nor is it really sweet and malty. You get a balance of slightly toasty flavors from the brown malts and slightly spicy flavors from the British hops. A good brown ale, it should be relatively dry and easy drinking. So don't be fooled by the brown color. This is a beer that you can drink all year long.
And now time for the regional news. Waseca residents are in for a treat when its first brewery opens soon. Ward House Brewery, located in downtown, received all its final licensing in late October and said it's shooting for a November 17th opening. Follow their Facebook page for opening details.
And here's some good news for those who like to make the drive up and down Highway 61 along the Mississippi River. Turning Water's Back Alley Brewing Company, an expansion of Turning Water's Bed, Breakfast, and Adventure, is slated to have a soft opening later this month with a grand opening to come in December. The Wabasha-based brewery will be serving up beer both at the inaugural Hop and Vines Beer and Wine Tasting Benefit and the annual Old Fashioned Christmas. Check out their Facebook page for all the details.
The Cannon Falls Beacon reported this week that Tillian Brewing had its license fees established and received taproom off-sale and on-sale licenses from the Cannon Falls City Council. The paper says Tillian estimates opening in 30 to 45 days, so keep an eye on their social media channels to know when they open. Well, that's going to put a bow on this show. Thanks to Austin for visiting us from Forager Brewing Company. After chatting with him, I'm going to get back down for some beer, but I want to try some of that poutine.
Oh, there's so much great food down there. I had a Cuban to die for. I brought it up during the interview, but just right now thinking about it, I'm getting a little hungry even thinking about it. They got some really great food down there, and of course their beer pairs really well with it. So
yeah, I'm hungry for the beer more so probably, even though I'm a big poutine guy. Looks like sounds like I just missed a couple of good beers that came out right after I was there, but I enjoyed my visit. It was good. So thanks again, Austin, for joining us on the show. Loved having you here. If you want to listen to us in 2 weeks, we're back at 11 a.m. Saturday, November 25th with another local chap who's brewing locally in Dundas. I believe you're familiar with that town.
I might know where it is. I believe I do.
Yeah, well, maybe you should stop in at Chapel Brewing. I believe it used to be, or I believe it is located in the space across from your old house growing up. So, but we can probably share that story next time when Andrew's on, because I'm sure it'll come up.
Yep.
But Andrew Burns will be joining us. He's the head brewer and one of the owners of Chapel Brewing, which opened back in September, I believe. So we're happy to have him on and chat about what he's doing in Dundas, putting out some good beer already. Next week, we're going to have the guys from Norfield Outdoors talking about something outdoorsy, I'm sure, right? It's in the name. Make sure to give them a listen, 11 a.m. here on 95 The One. As always, check us out on the internet. We've got a website at ontapnorfield.com. You can find all our archive shows. I think, I believe today was show number 20. So hopefully you enjoyed today's show. If you're listening live, check us out online. You can check out our old shows on there. There's 19 that came before that. That's how counting works. So we're at 20, 19 came before that. You can also catch all our old shows on iTunes, Stitcher, Player FM, a number of podcast platforms. Also, follow us on social media. We've got Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. We occasionally post photos of us drinking beer or taking pictures of the beer that we plan to drink or are in the middle of drinking. This past week, when we were traveling at the Star Keller, located next to Shell's, we did a Facebook Live video, so we're hoping to do a little bit more of that in the future.
Yeah, it was really kind of fun to bring people into where we're at and what we're doing. And
that was a great place to do it. Beautiful space. We can't say that enough.
I don't know if there's a tap room in the state that's more beautiful than that tap room. It's something else. So
can't wait to air that here in, I don't know, 4 weeks or so. So, well, join us in 2 weeks. We'll see you then.
Cheers.
Cheers.